All right, for our next presenter, Chris Tarr. I think no one here knows him. Chris has SBE certifications, CPBE, AMD, DRB, CBNE, along with other certifications, TCPIP, IBM, and ASAP. He is the current director of engineering for Magnum Media, which is Wisconsin-based, and he also served on the National Board of Directors for the SBE. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Tarr in EAS.
Thank you much. I got to pull my notes up here. There we go. Before we get started, I want to first of all say thanks to Gary Tim. Most of you know Gary. He was the SECC chair for years and years. An amazing man, a great friend of mine. I'm very fortunate to be able to still talk to him when I need to, because those are some huge shoes to fill with EAS. He was just, he's an amazing guy. I don't know how he did it. I'd also like to thank the SECC committee for all the work that they do and for all the service that they have, the WBA for being involved with that, and all of you for being here today. I think I when I did these slides, this was before the national test, and I think that's the one thing that's on everybody's mind right now. One of the biggest questions I've gotten since I've been here was, how'd it go? Well, it went well. Again, you know, a little while ago, I talked about the first test that we ever did being a huge dumpster fire. Second test was a bit less of a dumpster fire. And I think after all these years, we're getting close to it kind of working. I'm impressed. And part of the reason that's going to work is, you know, we'll go over this with the new rules here coming up in a few minutes. But the overall, I was on with FEMA during the test, and you want to hear something funny. Be on that call with the open line with FEMA during the test, you'd think it was a rocket launch. 118 for the WEA test, there's a countdown and there's a button push and somebody's looking at the map going, okay, you know, Alaska's green, Idaho's green. And then at 20 after when they did the over-the-air test, you know, okay, we're getting the test here, we're getting the test there. And then 2 minutes later, like, all right, everyone, it was a successful test. You hear everybody just cheering. Like they just landed the moon rover or something. It was just amazing. But it was interesting to hear because I could hear how they did their tests and how FEMA kind of staged all this. One of the questions I did get was why were there two separate tests? Why did WEA come first and then the over-the-air test come second? Simple answer was they couldn't do both tests at the same time, and they didn't want to confuse people by giving two different times for tests. So they went, well, we'll say 120 or, you know, 20 after the hour, and we're going to wing it. But that was one of the feedback items we gave them was, can we maybe not do that? Because people were thinking something was broken on the broadcaster's side when all of a sudden these tests weren't, you know, there was one test, they didn't hear the other, and it got to be kind of confusing. After that, we had, about an hour later, we had the call with the FCC to go state by state. As far as I know, there weren't any major problems. I think there was one place that didn't get the WEA tests, but it was offshore. So it kind of counted, it was a territory. But other than that, in Wisconsin, we did really well. I got word of one station that had a test that ran really late on TV. But other than that, I didn't get any feedback that we had any issues. I have 20 stations all over the place in the state, and I looked, and it seems like it ran really well. Got a lot of comments on how good the audio quality is. We'll cover that in a little bit. That was certainly way better than that first year of double audio and hearing tones over people talking and that sort of thing. But again, you know, when I hear complaints about how these tests are, why do we do them, and blah, 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 this is why. You know, every year it's gotten better, and it's because we've been testing. And so it's a pain, and nobody likes to do them, and everybody thinks it's just somebody keeping busy. You know, same thing with the ETRS forms. You know, why do I get to fill out forms for something that the FCC knows I did? Well, because if you notice, especially on Form 3, you log the times that these were received and from whom and that sort of thing. And that goes back to the FCC, and it takes them a while to go through it. But they look at that, and they can start to correlate possible weak spots in the system. And again, some of these rules that we're going to go over in a little bit here, some of those are addressed from these previous tests. Here we go. So EAS best practices, find and follow your state EAS plan. You can go to the FCC to find the resources to find the SECC chairs. So a question I get asked a lot, and some people don't realize this, is you're required to follow the state plan by the FCC. The FCC mandates how the AS works, but they leave the states to determine what's going to be involved with that. And so you are required to know the state EAS plan and follow it in terms of tests and monitoring assignments and things like that. So you do need to print that out with the handbook and post it, because if you get inspected, they're going to say, do you have your state plan? You need to have it. Care and feeding of the index, review the logs weekly. You know, one of the things I run into too is people go, well, you know, they're all in the box. That's not good enough. You have to look at them every week. You have to verify that you have sent and received tests. Check your sources every so often. Listen to the tuner audio. Does it sound good? Can you get the tests in? Subscribe to the local EAS mailing list if available. SBEWI, and I can run into me, I can give you the address, is the state Google group. And oftentimes that's where I'll send notifications about tests or EAS alerts or things like that. That's a good way to get information. And people will say, hey, on this monthly test, I didn't get this or I didn't get that. Make sure to keep the software and certificates in your NDEC up to date. These certificates from FEMA expire for the IPAWS network. And every couple of years, they've got to be updated. And if you don't, you're not going to get those tests. There has been recent guidance, and we did have a discussion about this. It was not official word from the FCC. It was staff at the FCC who said that if you can't receive a monitored source, just tune in anything. Well, yeah. I mean, immediately, yes. But anything that's not in the plan still requires a waiver. So keep that in mind. This is a temporary thing. And if there's an issue with receiving on a station you're supposed to monitor, let me know and we'll figure that out. In the event of a missed test, here's what you need to do. If it was a test you should have received, reach out to the station that was supposed to send it and just say, hey, just send a test. If it was not sent, just say something on your station log, which we talked about the fact that you know, there was a test missed, you talked to the station, they didn't send it. Or they sent it and we didn't get it, and I'm investigating it. Just something to explain why it's not there. If you missed sending a test, not the end of the world, just note in your log that you missed the test. Broken EAS. As of right now, there is no official deadline or rulemaking on if your EAS unit fails. At this point, you just have to note that it's been failed and you've sent it in for repairs. But just like everything else, like if you're operating under an STA or whatever, take notes. Write down when you send it in to get repaired. Write down when they're going to ship it back to you. Have that information, because if you get inspected and you don't have an NDEC or something in your building, you're going to get a fine unless you can prove that, yeah, it broke and it's out for repairs. There is rulemaking that's being proposed that will set time limits on this, very similar to an STA, where after, you know, 10 days you have to notify the FCC, so keep an eye out for that. This is what I use. It's a template of a station log. David was talking about station logs earlier. I love this. This makes things really easy. This is my EAS and station log. And I have one of these for each of my groups. And basically it says that I've reviewed the station operations and that, you know, anything that's not right has been noted here. And that's what the lines are for that. Then I attach the EAS logs for that week to this PDF. And then I electronically sign it. What's great is you don't print anything. It's all done in PDF. It takes about 5 minutes to put this together, to print the log, put it together. And then I also, if you can't really see it on the bottom there, but I also have a note in there that this station operates without continuous supervision in accordance with FCC and then the rule number. And basically, because we monitor our stations through a Burke or through Cliff, we don't have station logs, and we don't, you know, have local control of stations. It's all happened automated. So we get inspected, that is noted on there, and then this section in the center would be where if there's something out of tolerance or something that was not right, you would note that in that log. And then, again, it functions as your EAS and station log. It's a great idea. I've been doing this for a long time with these, and then I just keep them on a server. So, another good question that we get a lot of is, what needs to be forwarded? Check the state EAS plan. I mean, that's the official document that dictates what has to be forwarded. But the one thing I try to mention is, if everything in is emergency, nothing is. If we run the squawks for everything, nobody listens anymore. I've had a couple of stations across the state where, you know, they use the EAS system as their severe weather reporter. So whenever there's even a severe weather watch, they run the tones. And, you know, I think that's a little overzealous, and I think that starts to get people to tune out. Really, EAS was meant for an immediate threat to life. It's kind of like the old joke about warnings versus watches. A taco watch, you have the ingredients to make a taco. A taco warning, it's right in front of you. That's the same issue here. So keep in mind that, you know, you want to make sure that you're being judicious with it, because people will just stop listening if every time anything happens, there's an alert. You're better to forward the severe weather warnings than anything else. Another thing is avoid adding too much delay on the timer. You can do up to, I believe, SAGE is 15 minutes before it forwards automatically. You know, if there's a tornado barreling down on you, 15 minutes is a lot of time. And it could well have passed and torn everything apart in that 15 minutes. So I understand the reason for it, because if you're live on the air or you're playing spots or whatever. So one of the ways around that is if you have all of the EAS systems have the ability to day part. So you can say, hey, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., give me a 10-minute timer. After that, just run them as soon as they come in. Use that. So Amber Alerts is another question I get a lot of, and I'm hoping that if you guys find this presentation today interesting, maybe next year we'll get DOJ out to help talk about Amber Alerts. But they're not just willy-nilly. I love using that phrase. The request for an alert is issued by a local agency based on several factors. That alert is then sent to the alert team at the DOJ. And those factors are, you know, who the person is, who they suspect has the kids, what the relationship is, what kind of urgency there is, that sort of thing. The request is reviewed and only issued if it meets very specific criteria. Believe it or not, there are many alert requests that are denied each year. They are very good gatekeepers with that. The alerts run every half hour, then hour, until it's no longer necessary or expired. Somebody's asked once, well, you know, if there's somebody missing in La Crosse, why did we get the message in Madison? Well, it's generally based on the direction of travel. So if they leave, or if they suspect that they're heading in that direction, they're going to fire the alert all the way down in hopes that they can get ahead of the traveling of the people in question. So that is why. They don't necessarily do them statewide, but they will do them regionally if they think that they're going in a certain direction. And then according to the DOJ, the alerts have actually solved cases, and they are very appreciative, and they said, made sure I mentioned this, that they're very appreciative of the participation of broadcasters because it's worked. After every single alert, there is a meeting with the stakeholders, including broadcasters, to review what went right and what went wrong. If you notice anything wrong, that's where you contact us. And I'm on the phone with these guys, and I can say, hey, you know, this was this or this was that. It was bad. It was good. They're always looking for feedback. They asked me. I had a great meeting with them last month. And they sat down. They said, we don't get any feedback, so we don't know how this is going. Fill me in. So I told them what was going on. So What's new? This year especially, the FCC has required the state SECCs file their plan with the FCC and FEMA for approval. There are several guidelines that the states must follow. Ours was approved in February. It used to be where we just had a plan and the FCC knew about it. Now FCC and FEMA reviews those plans and they have to follow certain criteria to be approved, and then once they're filed, we update them once a year. Again, if you don't have a copy of the plan, you can contact us, or the SBE 24 website has a copy of the plan. And again, post that with your handbook. So here's the moment we've been waiting for. This is the new rule that goes in effect in December, amendment to Part 11. I know we're all excited about this. So the major changes, the stations must change frequency to 640 or 1240. They need to cycle between carrier on and carrier off every 5 seconds, and the messages must be sent round robin. For those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, find a guy with gray hair and ask. This is the old Conelrad from the 50s and 60s. It's a joke. So what you need to know, everybody's going to need new firmware in their ES encoders. When are we going to see it? There's the cricket chirping. Nobody knows. It was supposed to be August, July, October, and now they've just gone radio silent. We have no clue. I would suspect that we will see a delay in the implementation of the rules based on the fact that if we can't follow them because of the manufacturers, what are we going to do? So I scour those sites every day. If you have a SAGE unit, I know they've got a mailing list you can get signed up for. I, of course, was a fool and paid for all of my station's upgrades back when they were on sale in, like, June. It's money I'm not seeing right now. So what you need to know is the whole reasoning behind this is, again, based on our dumpster fire. We were the guinea pigs. We were the test people. We were the canaries in the coal mine. And they want to improve the quality of information. They've revised the rules to improve the quality of those alerts over radio and television so we don't get double audio, we don't get hiss, we don't get bleed through, we don't get static in the message. You know, just all of those things when you hear sixth and seventh generation messages, or in a lot of cases, don't hear sixth or seventh generation messages. They want to improve that and they want to make it better because that was the feedback they got from us. So here are some of the changes. Encoders are going to need to check for a CAP version of any legacy alert and broadcast the CAP version if available. So and I think on the next slide I kind of go into that. But basically what they're saying is now if there's an alert, your box is going to wait 10 seconds. And it's going to wait for, in that 10 seconds, to wait for a CAP message. If a CAP message comes in over IPAWS, that's what they have to forward. So it does. That's the 10 seconds is to give a lot of time for polling. Well, it is in terms of forwarding alerts. It's not. It's going to wait to forward any alerts until it's gone through a polling cycle. So you've got the message will come in from a third party, and it will not forward until it's polled CAP for 10 seconds to see if there's a CAP message. It doesn't, but it doesn't pull once a minute. You, if after 10 seconds the polling is not shown anything, it will forward the test. Yes, you're always actively polling, and it's usually several times a minute. So, and we'll get to the fact that you can increase that time if you want. So, basically, it will check for that CAP message. If the CAP message goes, it'll forward it. If the CAP message doesn't come, it will forward the legacy message. A couple of wording changes to make things clearer. Emergency action notification becomes national emergency message. National originator changes from primary entry point to the United States government, because that'll make people feel better. You know, they found that people don't know what a primary entry point is. It's kind of inside baseball. And again, national tests change from national periodic test to national test of the emergency alert system. So I say, see anything in common? All of that is wording. It's to make it end-user friendly. You know, we know what some of these technical terms mean, but the people listening may not. So what doesn't change? Continue to pull the FEMA IPAWS server to detect cap messages, and continue to follow procedures set in the local and state plans. So, you know, this is where we get a little bit deeper into what you were saying there. Participants that receive both legacy and cap alerts are trying to, or are required to distribute the cap alert instead of the legacy one if it comes in before the legacy alert. So right now, by default, the new firmware is going to have a 10-second timer. So when the first legacy alert comes in, it waits 10 seconds to pull IPAWS. If an IPAWS message comes in, a cap message comes in, that's the same. It will do the cap message first. If it doesn't get that, then it will fire the legacy alert. Now, the user can increase that time and say, well, I want to wait 20 seconds or 30 seconds or whatever. That's fine. The minimum is 10 seconds. So, and if alert comes in from your, you know, your LP1, and it comes in first, there's going to be a 10-second delay while it pulls IPAWS to see if there's an identical message. The reason for that is because, obviously, the audio quality on the cap message is going to be better than generally what you would get over the air. Now, in the case of the national test, that was all cap for the most part. There are a few stations that got the audio from the LP1 first and went with that versus cap. But generally, cap was fast enough that a lot of stations went with the cap message first because that's what came first. Generally, these boxes pull every couple of seconds to the IPAWS server. So, you know, generally that message comes first. And I found generally somewhere about a 20-second delay from when we received the ICAP or the IPAWS alert and the legacy alert on the emergency or on the national test. So on most of my stations, the cap message went first. And that's what I'm talking about here. They have to pull the IPAWS at least once every 10 seconds after detecting the header of the legacy alert. So that's the other thing, is you're not going to catch it mid-cycle in terms of pulling. When the legacy alert is received, it pulls the IPAWS server again. So in addition to the actual regular pulling, this will trigger another pull to the cap server, to the IPAWS server for the cap message. And then this includes the required monthly tests as well. TV stations need to update their equipment to reflect the new codes and originator names using a new standard script video display for NPT nationwide test alerts that have been received in legacy format instead of just constructing a visual display from the legacy code. So in other words, if I've got this right, I'm a radio guy, you can't just forward the text of the legacy EAS message onto the screen. It actually has to be put into the new format from the legacy codes. I'm not going to finish up quite yet, but where was I here? There's something else that I wanted to bring up. Oh, there are one other thing that I wanted to bring up too with the WBA, and I was talking to the WBA folks, Michelle, and they're talking about the broadcaster's program for the identification cards. I'm going to bring up my notes on that so that I get this right. One moment, there we go. The broadcaster's ID program. And what that is it provides broadcast transmitter engineers in Wisconsin with an identification card to assist with gaining access to their stations in times of emergency. I've had one for years, fortunately, never had to use it. But it is something that you want to sign up for if you're in the state of Wisconsin. Your general manager can talk to the WBA to get signed up for the program. They give you an ID card that's in the same format as the cards that everyone in emergency management uses. So they instantly recognize it. It has your picture on it, it has your information. And it is only for technicians, and it's only in the event of you needing to get somewhere that might be blocked off because of an emergency. On that same note, I've gotten some questions about FirstNet, which is AT&T's priority cell phone program for first responders. For a while, they were adding broadcasters to it. They've paused that. Apparently, there were some concerns about stations streaming audio and things like that to their transmitters using the FirstNet equipment and causing bandwidth issues, but we're still looking for answers for that. That would be a good thing for engineers to have. It just gives you priority cell service in the event of emergency. So we're looking into that some more to see what's going on. And I believe now that is what I had to say. Take any questions, because there's usually quite a few. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, all right, got a couple texts. First one, should you file with FCC if your weekly test gets scheduled close to the last weekly test? Or is that supposed to be at a set time? I'm the one that actually submitted this. For the required weekly test that we send out?
Yes.
Is that supposed to be at the same time every week, or is that...
No. It should be random times.
So what happens if our traffic program schedules it for Saturday at 11 p.m., and then the randomness puts it at Sunday at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, what you need to do is you need to set up a week, and the FCC doesn't really define what a week is, but you have to define it. So is it Saturday to Sunday... Sunday to Saturday, Saturday to Sunday.
Okay, so but would I have to file if that does happen, is my question.
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, again, take a note on the log. Oh,
all right.
Sorry, Cliff. Take a note on the log and note that if for some reason you're doing two in 1 week and not the other. Mm. I would, at that point, though, by the time you're doing your review, that should have been in the past.
Yeah,
so
fair.
You know you haven't done one that week and you should do that.
Right. All right, then the next question. EAS, with the label change, does the code change as well, i.e. EAN to NEA, PEP to USG, et cetera?
No, the codes are not changing. Well, yeah, they're the same. They just are worded differently when you're converted to text. So, for example, when the message will say, instead of NPT, instead of saying National Periodic Test, it will say a National Emergency Alert Test. Or alert.
Says it's on, there it is.
There we go.
Hey, the FirstNet priority cell phone service, is that available only through AT&T, or do the other carriers offer that or something similar?
It's through AT&T, but it has to be sponsored by an agency.
Okay.
So then that can be, the broadcast company owner, it could be your local emergency management agency, but there does have to be a sponsor for the service.
Okay.
You Super, can't just
thanks.
Walk in and get it.
Yes. In my area, I notice a lot of the child abduction alerts just come in with the tones and the crunchies and nothing else. It seems useless because there's a child abducted somewhere. We have no details. Have you had much of that or heard much of that besides, what I'm experiencing?
No, you're not. Are you in Wisconsin?
No, I'm okay. In Northwest Indiana, Chicago area as well.
Yeah, we don't have that issue in Wisconsin. Every Amber Alert that we send has text or has speech along with it. And in fact, Gary did a lot of work to tweak the audio on those in their system to make sure the audio is very clear.
And my assumption is it's not the broadcaster that, the PEP that's originating, and it's probably coming from an agency, and they don't know what they're doing.
Well, and remember, the PEPs don't originate anything.
Exactly.
So and all of these things come from an originating agency. So in the case of Wisconsin, it's originated by the Department of Justice. And then there are some that are originated by the state police. We also now have counties that can originate tests as well. And so that, if you're not hearing anything, that is then on the originator of the test that is having the issue. And that's where I would find out who your, committee chairman or chairperson in your state is. And I would ask them about that and see if they can get together with the Amber Alert people. Anyone else?
A question for you. With Amber Alerts, if it's instituted by, say, State Patrol or whatever, who does it go to then? Does it go to... Which agency then does our system monitor to pick it up? Not NOAA weather? Is it still?
No, it will go through either a PEP or through an LP1. It also depends on where that alert is. So the workflow is basically the local police agency determines that there should be an Amber Alert. They feel that an Amber Alert should be issued. They then send the information to the Wisconsin Department of Justice. They have an Amber Alert team. They review that. They determine whether or not it's an appropriate situation for Amber Alert. When they determine that it is, they send the alert via, here in Wisconsin, via Wisconsin Public Radio. And then that gets sent to wherever region it needs to go to. And again, usually they can be sent statewide. However, they do use FIPS codes, so it can be sent somewhere and not be broadcast again. Ours do go through IPAWS, as do all of the local. We do now have several counties who are running weekly tests there through IPAWS as well.
Sorry, I did it again.
Anything else? Again, just a couple reminders. The Madison SBE website has the plan. It has all of our contact information. I think here, my email address is up there, chris@tar.cz, pretty easy to remember. If you have any questions about EAS or in the state especially, let me know. Be happy to help. Other than that, thank you very much.